Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight's show, dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and science and whatever else we can throw in there, is, I thought, going to be interesting because it will be about the spiritual principles of romantic love. I've done shows on love before, including romantic love, but I thought I'd center on this particular subject just because I think some people have a lot of questions that sometimes they don't really have great answers for, and they would like to know more. And tonight maybe is that night to find out. If you would like to participate, you can do so. The numbers are right on screen, and you can call in. If you're in the U.S. or Canada, it's free if you use those 800 numbers. And anywhere else in the world, then you got to pay for it. But you still can call in if you want. Interestingly, we haven't had anyone call in who doesn't speak English. That would be an interesting challenge, wouldn't it? So, of course, then you might ask yourself why they would be listening to a show in English, but you never know. Let me start off by defining what I'm going to talk about. I like to do that, as you know if you've heard this show before. And so when I'm talking about spiritual principles, I'm talking about those things that are part of God's thought, the way God might think, as best as we can understand, principles of romantic love, and this mostly involving concepts or why things are that way. So that's what I'm trying to convey in today's show, and hopefully it'll make some sense to those of you who have some questions about this. I hope you all have some. Even if you don't, maybe it'll be an interesting refresher course, so to speak. Let me begin with what I mean by romantic love, because some people might say, well, okay, love is universal, you know, it's this or that. Romantic love is, in my understanding, a love that involves the exchange of all kinds of energies, including sexual energy. And so if there is no sexual energy, I would not include it in the definition of romantic love. Now, some people are going to disagree with that. They're going to say, wow, can't you be romantic with someone who you don't express sexuality to? It's a possibility, but romantic love involves sexual feelings. And that's a critical element, because if it isn't involving sexual feelings, then it can be all kinds of love, like brotherly love or parental love or love of friendship and your neighbors, I mean, anybody. So this is a specific category, and I know that a number of people have used similar definitions, actually, from Dr. Phil to Oprah, who are close, of course, affiliated, and a number of other people have actually defined this in not too different of a way. And so the question becomes then, how many people claim to be romantically in love and maybe even married, but they don't have sexual feelings for the person that they're supposedly romantically in love with? And the numbers are probably higher than we would like, not terribly high, I hope. But if they are, then it's a question of redefining and recognizing that that is not a romantic, loving situation. As I define it further, I think it will become clearer to those who have questions about this, because I know some people do, about what it is that they're dealing with and how they can become, we'll say, better at developing a romantic love relationship with someone else. And let me move on to the next point that I want to make. For those of you who have read some of the material I've written or heard me speak before, you probably know that I define romantic love as requiring monogamy. And you might say, well, come on, I could be sexual with 50 people. It's not a problem for me. Well, it is a problem in the sense you can't love 50 people romantically. You can only love one. Oh, okay. Now, why is that? Well, here's the reason why. Remember, this is about concepts. So concepts always have an answer to a why question. The reason why is this, that in order to match the kind of energy that you're exchanging in a sexual sense to a person that you're giving to, you need to give them the energy that will help them in the spin of their sexual chakra so that they are able to develop a clearer sense of their own sexual identity and also become healthier and to live in a stronger way and be able to return energy to you as well, if that's possible. And so, if that's true, to not love somebody by giving to them in that way would be selfish if it was supposedly romantic in nature. And it would also mean the following, that if we're going to have a matching to one particular person, each person is unique in the specific way that their chakra spins. I know there are 6¾ billion people in this world, and half of them are one sex, they have another, or even if they're the same sexes, that's a whole other story I'll get into later. But the point is that that's a lot of people. How could they all be unique? Because there's so much more dimensionality to the centers in a human being than just the physical body. There's the astral, which is our feelings, a lot of people call that, and there's a monastic or mental part of romantic love, and it even gets into the intuitional realm in people who are very advanced in their consciousness. So when you look at this, and you combine all these different elements, and you look at how they can, it's sort of like a combination lock where the more dials you got, you got more possibilities. But instead of 10 numbers in the dial, the best way to understand it, and this is going to be a little complicated, is to think about it in terms of like 360 numbers on the dial, and maybe you got four dials, and you do the math, it's called factorial, 360 times 360 times 360 times 360. And then there's another issue in it in terms of a thing called intensity. And intensity actually has a scale, although this gets into quantum physics. And if you were to multiply everything by its intensity as well, that's a whole nother array. More than 360, it'd be, you know, several thousand times. So it's way more than the number of 6.75 billion. It's so much more that it's easy to have a uniqueness in an entire planet of each individual sexuality, meaning that we being unique beings, each of us as human beings, it allows us to therefore develop this kind of sexuality. And I say that God created us, and God created this system in human beings, which is, by the way, mostly missing in a lot of other creatures. So even some animals aren't able to develop a sexually monogamous, romantic kind of love between them. Some can to some extent, not as well as humans, though, because we're more complex, we're more creative, and there are issues that involve our souls that complicate the situation even further. I'll get into that later. And so the whole situation comes to a head, and we look at this and we say, wow, so it is possible, it's only possible, it's almost definite, that each of us is unique, and if we are going to love one individual, one person, we can't love any other in a sexually loving way or romantic kind of love. Now you could say, well, what about jumping around? I know all of the secrecy that people have, and they come up with these, well, I do this or that. No, you can't on the moment say, well, at noon, I'm going to love someone with this set of types of energy representation, which is very complex. And by 6 o'clock that evening, I will be able to switch it to a new person. And so I really love both of them, but I just am able to swap them around and change things around. First of all, it takes a considerable period of time to really match a person different from ourselves there. And of course, they're all different to some extent, but the more different, the more difficult it is to really match to a person the correct spin and intensity and phase in this whole thing that I'm talking about to their sexual chakra, and as it therefore then affects all the rest of the chakras in their body, including their health and other things, and our health. And then for them to do it back to us, back and forth, is a fantastically difficult and not quickly achieved usual result. Could it happen virtually instantaneously? Well, I guess anything's possible, but the chances are no. So one of the other spiritual principles of romantic love is it takes quite a while to develop. Probably in terms of people who are understanding and wanting to have that kind of relationship with the other person, in the neighborhood of a number of months of knowing them, if on an average. But it also has to do with so many other factors that I'll cover this evening, that even that is probably a misnomer to try to put it in some kind of time frame of that nature. But on an average, it certainly is in months. I'm just trying to give some of you out there an idea, not necessarily a rule about this. But it just takes a lot of time, because every time people have sexual feelings for each other, and the more that they actually express these feelings, either verbally or physically, and the more they use the different bodies to incorporate all of these things, including the mental body, which is hard for people to understand about mental love, but we'll get into that too. This becomes gradually a better and better fit, and they become better at achieving the results. Most of the time, it's kind of up and down, though. It's not like, oh, I'm just going to keep going up and away and away. Usually there's some down points. Sometimes one of the people is better at it than another. So you have, you know, there's some people have a stronger period, and then sometimes they have a little weaker period, while the other one might be trying to make up for the difference. And so it is not a smooth journey in most cases. And so this becomes very complicated, because the majority of people have a different understanding. We have fantasized the process of developing romantic love and make it seem as though it's some kind of instantaneous process based upon some kind of magical, maybe even karma kind of thing, and boom, that's it, and everything's going to work out fine, and the people are going to... And it doesn't work that way at all. But are people immediately either attracted or not attracted to each other? Yes. That's a fact. But that has to do with other things we're going to talk about today. And so it's the attraction is a good thing. I mean, without it, we probably wouldn't have people getting together much at all. But it doesn't solve this complex equation that is needed to be developed over a considerable length of time. Now, another question that people might have, since we're addressing the beginning aspects of this whole thing, is, well, okay, if people can be attracted to each other, then what is the principle involved between whether or not you act upon these feelings in some behavioral sense, particularly physically, versus not? Because that's a big question, you know. I think that a lot of people question that issue and aren't really sure about it. Some people of various religious persuasions are convinced that certain types of physical sexual contact is not good until the people have committed themselves to be together for the rest of their lives. And other people say, well, that's hogwash. You know, you have sex the first night or whatever, and, you know, figure the whole thing out later. And between those two poles, there's probably some more helpful ways of behaving together. But the most critical element is actually not the physical question. So we're almost asking the wrong question if that's the first question that's being asked. The real question seems to be, how balanced is the relationship between the two people in the ways that they're giving to each other? And the most important thing, and this is a new concept, you ready, is how much are they co-creating together? Because this is spiritual love. Now, I'm not talking about your common everyday love, because you could have non-spiritual romantic love, meaning that it isn't about what God may think. It's about what humans decide to think about. That would have some things in common with what I've said so far. But then this co-creative, especially if it's co-creative of enlightenment or light, making things that they do together virtuous, that's a very godlike thing. That's a really important element. And the more that that's involved, the better the relationship will become, and the easier it will, over time, be able to work out any other difficulties. That's probably the most crucial element, but unfortunately the most evasive, most difficult to understand, and also one that I don't think most people even think about. So here we have the very most important consideration kind of in the background, oftentimes left behind, left somewhere else. How much are you co-creating together? And if you've heard some of my other shows on this subject or similar ones, you know how important I stressed the nature of the interrelationship of people's lives and co-creation of virtue together being the number one factor. So this is a critical factor, but unfortunately one that is ignored. We'll talk more about that as well, obviously. Okay, let's get to some other basic elements that involve spiritual principles so we can cover this in a wide way and understand a lot more about it. Okay, what about the question then of having children or raising children together and or quote-unquote legally being married versus not legally being married, and other factors that may be the norm, we'll say, for people. Well, if you're going to raise children, and this is the odd thing, you don't have to be sexually, romantically in love, provided that you are clear with the children about what it is you're doing. The reason you have to be clear about it is because otherwise they may adopt that as correct spiritual romantic love. And that's where the problem is. So if you ever have a relationship with someone which is not spiritually romantic, but it may be romantic, but not spiritually romantic, it's good, it's even important to inform the children about that if there are children about. It's difficult to do this if the kids are below 7 years of age. And that's where it gets touchy. But above that, you can just tell them, well, this is how we feel. We're not necessarily developing a spiritual relationship, but we want to do this other thing. And so, and I'm not trying, obviously, to be condemning of people who have non-spiritual but sexually romantic loving relationships, because there's a lot of people who do that. And there's also people who raise children and have a family and a life together that have no romantic feelings for each other. So, I mean, that's the other side of the coin. And then, obviously, the spiritual principles have to be explained as being excluded to the children, or they will misunderstand it and be brought up in ways that may damage them later in life, because they'll think that's the model for spiritual romantic love, and it's not. So being clear with children is more important than maybe what you do or don't behave as, although children do learn what they live, probably more than what they're taught. But if you're going to live in a way that's not spiritual, you certainly should at least be honest and direct so they have a better chance at learning what spiritual love really is. That's true, and I'm going to mention homosexuality. That's true if people are homosexual. For various reasons, which I will cover, homosexuality has a great deal of difficulty in being spiritually romantic love. It could be love, but spiritually romantic love is a very difficult problem, which I'll discuss. And because of that, then that has to, again, be disclosed, so to speak, and explained to children so they don't get the wrong idea, because they aren't necessarily going to be homosexual themselves. And in their attempts to be heterosexual, they may get very confused by what they do or don't experience in the nature of the relationship of the people that they're watching and who are their parents. Okay, so let's go on. And by the way, we have more time today. We'll be going, well, I started a minute or two late, I guess I can add that on. We'll probably be going to about 17 or so minutes after the hour. And that's good, because we get more time to cover the subject. And this is not an easy one, as they all are not usually easy, right? There's a lot to talk about, and it gives us more time to really gain a more full understanding of the process. Okay, what are some of the other principles that are really important as basic? And one, I'm now going to go into the more practical realm. I've been very conceptual at this point, telling you whys, but now I'm going to go into some practical issues. If you want to develop a spiritually romantic love with somebody, you need to consider the following, that in principle, the other person has to become more important than your sensations in terms of the physical world and obligations in terms of labors and communication, etc. The other person has to become more important than your feelings and emotions, some people might refer to it, and your expression of them and those feelings being expressed to you. The other person also has to become more important in their ideas and thoughts than your ideas and thoughts. And finally, the other person has to become more important in the way that they choose to co-create with their creator and to seek a world of virtue and enlightenment. Those things have to be more important in the partner than in yourself. And that is a difficult challenge in order to achieve spiritual romantic love. This is also true of love in general in different other ways than in the way that I'm describing romantic love right now. So you can apply some of this to those other circumstances. And why is that the case? Why is it that the other person has to be more important in all the ways I just said, and of others too, but I'm making it as simple as possible, than for yourself, and vice versa? So it has to go both ways. But why is that the case? Well, it has to do with the following. Love is, in a sense, an experiment, so to speak, in becoming part of God on a conscious level. And for it to become more and more conscious, it has to become more and more giving. If you don't love on a conscious level, you can't love in a spiritual way most of the time. You might, by accident or not by, well, say, design and planning, achieve it once in a while. But because it's so complicated and difficult, it requires really conscious attention. And that requires this givingness, this focus of inclusion and wanting to give more to others, more to the significant other, than to receiving yourself. And that is a critical element in breaking through to becoming a spiritual lover. Okay? So if that one condition is not met that I just described in the different ways as I described it, you can't be in a spiritual, romantic, loving relationship. That's something serious to consider. And a lot of you are probably scratching your heads right now and saying, whoa, maybe I haven't been doing this quite right. Or maybe it isn't being done quite right with me. It is possible for a while for it to be one-sided. But, you know, most people, as soon as they recognize, and it just may take a little while, that the other person isn't doing it back, they recognize that their love for the other person isn't helping them, it's hurting them, because it's making them more selfish. So then, as an act of love, they would back off and maybe even terminate the relationship. Terminate meaning leave it, rather than continue it, because they would recognize that that isn't love anymore for them. And so, not because they weren't receiving, but because their giving was not wise giving, and it was leading to a more selfish person on the other side. Hope you understand what I just said. So it's very important to recognize this, because this is one of the common elements of mistake. Too many people are in relationships where one or both are not truly seeking to give rather than to receive, and especially to give wisely. Wise giving means the other person is helped to become a better giver and doesn't keep trying to take more, but seeks to give more. And we should be very attuned to this. You do not want to continue in a relationship in a way that helps the other person to become more selfish, because that's not love. You're not loving them, and it's certainly they're not loving you. Are you following me? Hey, okay. So this is a very practical model. I'm hoping that this one element will solve some people's problems that they might have in questioning the nature of relationship or various other relationships they've had or one that they're in now, in terms of whether or not it's spiritual romantic love or not. Okay, and then let's move into a more sensitive area. That is the area of physicality of sexuality. The nature of the physicality is always based upon the needs of the other person to be able to establish within themselves greater and greater levels of energy at levels in ways that helps to enlighten them in a physical sense and then beyond into the astral, etc. So this is a difficult subject, because there is no formula for this. This is really based upon a give and take and experiential issues between you and the other person. This is where homosexuality has its difficulties. When two people are of the same sex and they try to give energy to the other person, each time they give the energy back and forth, it creates resistance and retained energy in the sexual center and then eventually other centers of their partner. So there's a contradiction, a real paradox, and actually a contradiction in having sexual relations with someone in a homosexual sense and trying to make it romantic love, because every time you do it, you cause some harm to the other person. Now, granted, you may have the right motives. You may say, gee, I really love this person. I do feel it, and it's for genuine real. But the problem is the exercise of the actions promotes a breaking down in the senses and in the centers, and eventually in the sense of identity, sexual identity, and other ways, other parts of the person's identity. And so it's destructive rather than constructive. Is there any way around that? None that I'm aware of. You can mitigate it, you can reduce it, and again, with children, you can be honest with them about the nature of what it means, but you can't change the laws of God. And does that mean that God made it so that human beings were not supposed to be homosexual? Apparently so, because there's, well, and it's entirely possible, and by the way, in other beings other than human beings, possibly, you know, some monkeys or something like that or whatever, that they can have as much homosexual actions as they want because they don't develop spiritual love in the first place. They're developing other elements of sexuality, which may have to do with social bonding and things, but not the part that gets them closer to God, because they don't even have a recognition of God. They don't have a sense of God. And we do. Once you have a sense of God, you gain a responsibility to co-create with God And it appears, based upon, again, just the way the energy moves back and forth, and this is a little more complicated than I'm going to get into tonight, but there's a book I've written. You can go look at it if you want to understand it in more detail. And so eventually it seems that if you want to become spiritually romantic with someone, they have to be of the opposite sex. That doesn't mean you can't love them in many other ways. But while having sexual interaction, it is incumbent that the person be of the opposite sex. That's a difficult thing to swallow. I know some of you may be upset with me. You might say, oh, he's a homophobe, or I don't like him, or whatever. Well, you know, I'm the messenger. I didn't create the message. I'm only describing it based upon my best understanding of how it works. If you have a different understanding of how it works, we can have a discussion about that. And there are ways to test this. I have tested it myself, and there are ways to test this. Again, it's fairly complicated, so you have to set up a kind of a paradigm, you know, experiment kind of thing. But if you do it, I think you'll discover the things I'm saying are correct. But if you don't, then fine, you can just ignore what I'm saying, because if you find it's not true for you, that's all right. But what I'm saying is that in the times I've checked this out, and in many discussions with other people too, it's borne out to be factual. That is, this is the way it is, and whether we like it or not, that's a different issue. Whether or not we think it's fair or not, that's another issue. And I am not, by the way, suggesting that there should be some kind of laws outside of God itself. There should be any kind of laws that say that homosexuals have less rights as people than the rest of us who are not homosexual, or anyone. There's no reason to even consider that. That has nothing to do with what I'm discussing, really. What I'm saying is that if you want to have a spiritually romantic love with somebody, you're going to have maybe an impossible time trying to do that, as I'm going to fully define it tonight in today's show, with someone of the same sex. And if you can do it and you do achieve it, fantastic. We'll talk about it. Maybe I'll learn something and gain a better understanding about it. Okay, so let's continue on. Let me talk about what other basic principles, because if we're going to get into complex things, I'm going to talk about more generalities and more ways that you can help yourself to develop a better relationship after we get to these basic principles. What are some other basic principles that are involved in spiritual romantic love? And that is that as a person develops their consciousness, in other words, their ability to be inclusive with more and more things about them, around them, and to be able to take those things and create new, better factors, new, better, whatever, because I have to be general, then they are getting more conscious, and with consciousness comes a need to be more responsible. This is the difficulty that most people seem to have about metaphysics and spirituality in general, that if you're going to really move down the path of leading a spiritual life, you're going to reach a point where the levels of responsibility become steep. And it is more and more difficult to go back to earlier ways of less responsibility without dire consequences. I'm talking about like fast-moving and pretty severely negative karmic results. So as you develop your consciousness, the people that you become romantic with are going to become less and for longer periods of time with one person, until eventually you will be able, hopefully, to find a single person that will be a life mate. Some people might say even a soulmate. And this comes about by increasing the level of responsibility that you take for not just the relationship and in the relationship with the other person, but the principle is this. You cannot develop a greater level of spiritual romantic love with another person more than you live your life in general with all the people and things involved in it. Okay? So let me put it in like a number, all right? Let's say you live your life 50% of the time as a really great, giving, loving person with all the people around you. And in spiritual terms, what this means is that if you meet someone who you become spiritually romantic with and you develop romantic love with, you cannot exceed the 50% level in that relationship, even though you think you might, because this is one of the big illusions people have, than you have in the rest of your life, the entire rest of your life. So the rest of your life becomes the totality of your romantic life, and not vice versa. This is difficult. It's a bitter pill for some people, and a lot of people have the illusion of the opposite. Now you can say, okay, I want to know why that's the case, because I think I could be really loving with my wife and have a girlfriend or boyfriend, and I could have a great time and be a total jerk with everybody else. Okay, here's why. Because the two of you are co-serving all of the other people in both of your lives. You're not separated from those other people. So if you're a total jerk to everybody else in the rest of your life, you can't be any more than that with the person that you are romantically, spiritually involved with. Have you got that? I know. You don't like it. Look, I didn't say this is going to be popular. I just said that I'm going to try to level with you about the way things work. And I know that this stuff is difficult. And I don't know if anybody has ever put all this down in a book someplace and said, well, here it is. I haven't heard of it. If you know of one, let me know. Email me. But, the point is that these principles are very important for people to know, because you can think about, what if everything I've said up to this point, and it's only been one, it's been like 37, 38 minutes or something like that, what if everything I've said up to this point, a person did the opposite of? What would the results be? Pretty bad. There's not going to be much chance that they're going to have a spiritually romantic love, yet I can tell you, a lot of people are doing a lot of this stuff not right. And they don't even know it, and therefore they don't know what's wrong. And they look out and they say, well, how come my relationship sucks? It's not working. And the answers are pretty obvious if they knew just what we have covered so far. And again, the rest of the show, I'm going to go over more practical things. I realize this stuff is real hard to follow, but it's important to know it because you can apply it in so many ways. And remember, you can listen to the show as often as you want. So you can go back and get into the archives and say, what did he say again? There's those 20 ways. You know, like the 50 ways you can leave your lover, and this is maybe the 50 ways you can have a lover. How's that? I should have made that show the title, the 50 ways you can have a lover. Except it might have been a little bit too cute. Okay? All right, listen, we're going to take a break right now. And when we come back, I'll cover a lot more on practical terms of things that we can help ourselves with and some of the problems, the practical issues, more than just the conceptual ones. And hopefully that'll make some sense to everybody, especially since I've covered all these other things right now. So we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes, give or take, from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Well, we're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about the spiritual principles of romantic love. Yes. Or the 50 ways you can find a lover. Again, being a little cute about it. And I thought that in coming back, we would get more practical now. Talk about some other things that might be helpful in an immediate sense with people who are truly wanting to have a spiritually romantic love with their partner. And maybe it just hasn't been happening, and maybe I can be of some help. Now, again, I can't hit everything because it's a subject we could talk for hours and hours and probably never exhaust. But at any rate, let me give some ideas so that it will be somewhat helpful. First of all, the first principle, and I didn't get to finish this idea in the first half, is that if people are committed in a marriage sense, in a legal sense, that does not mean that they are necessarily going to have a more spiritually romantic love experience. As a matter of fact, it may be somewhat hampering depending upon the nature of the relationship the people are in. Why is that the case? Because marriage is an artificiality created by humans to attempt to enforce and control certain elements of contractual relationship. It is not part of the relationship with God. Now, you could say, but when I got married, I had a religious ceremony, and it really meant things to me. I'm not talking about that marriage. I'm talking about legal marriages now. If you have a relationship with God, and you call that your marriage, then yes, that's very important. But I'm talking about the legal, meaning that piece of paper and all that stuff, and, you know, and so the problem with that is that it sanctions marriage from a standard lower than God. These days, for those people who are fairly conservative, they look at the relationship with God being the prime importance and the relationship with government being not only secondary, but possibly and antithetical to their relationship with God and not necessarily supporting it. And even if it isn't antithetical, it is not a replacement. So the fact that you go and get a certificate and you sign the papers and whether you have a prenuptial or not or whatever, all those things do not serve to bond people spiritually. They are truly, truly a sort of mundane, is the name that's often used, method of contractually having a relationship with someone. What are the advantages? Well, one of the advantages is for people who are not spiritual enough it keeps them together long enough, because there's oftentimes obstacles to dissolving the relationship, so that they can sometimes remedy some of the problems they may be having and make a greater commitment to resolving those problems. So there's an advantage with that, and I don't want to gloss over it. For some people, it's important. It's also important in terms of children. For people who are very spiritually responsible, whether they were legally married or not, they would take care of their children and be as good a parent in either circumstance, maybe even better. But for people who are relatively irresponsible, it ensures that children have some rights to the parents and vice versa, and responsibilities of the parents to the children are enforceable to some degree by quote-unquote laws. But again, that does not make the relationship more spiritual. It just makes it more manageable, and it helps some children who might be harmed. So there are some advantages to that. And for those people, maybe it's good that there are people who are spiritual and choose to get legally married, because it sets a good example for the people who are irresponsible. So there's another catch to it. And certainly if it's valuable enough for that reason without being destructive in other ways, and there's a lot of ways that legal marriage can be destructive, then it probably has some benefits for children per se. But if you're not going to have children, it becomes more and more difficult to really, we'll say, come up with spiritual reasons for being legally married. Now, I know a lot of people are going to say, oh, no, I follow the law. That's spiritual. The law of man is not spiritual. The law of God is spiritual, and that's something you get from your heart, not from a book or a code or some judge or some other legal body. Okay, so those are important things to think about. And especially in this day and age where so much emphasis is put on the question of what we call legal marriage. And legal marriage is much less important than the spiritual side of marriage. Okay, so the next thing, so I hope that maybe gives people some guidelines about what they might want to do or not do. People who are irresponsible, and a lot of young people are, by the way, should definitely be legally married, because they aren't going to necessarily follow a spiritual life anyway, and the harm that they do to society, especially with their children and in other ways, is too great, and is somewhat offset by legal marriage. So there's a good reason for its existence in those cases. But today we're talking about people who are doing the opposite, people who are really seeking a spiritual romantic relationship, and in those cases, that's a different situation completely. Okay, what's some other practical ways we can look at this situation? Generally speaking, you can determine your relationship in several different realms. First is the physical. Most marriages, even when they're done in a religious ceremony, are till death do the people part. Now, that death is just of the physical body, and most of you know that you go on to live in other dimensions of time and space, and eventually, through growing in consciousness, you grow back to being your own soul, which exists in another part, a highest part, a much highest part of the mental dimension, and eventually we just rejoin with our souls. It's a wonderful experience, actually. But if you choose to, you could choose to be married in more than the physical dimension. You could choose to be married in the physical dimension until death, and then go on and agree to be married for 100 astral years or 200. And the odd thing about this is an amazingly honest and very spiritual way to contract with another person for the sake of co-creation. Not procreation, not necessarily just to have children, but co-creation with God. So you might say, well, for this period of time, we'll agree to be together, and do these things. And you actually could decide what kinds of things those might be. This is a really, I mean, this is so far out of an idea. I don't know how many of you are going to really try this. But for those who do, I would really love to hear from you. So in other words, you're going to say, okay, this is a list. You're going to create a list together of the things that you want to create a virtue in this life and maybe some part of the next lifetimes. And it could be into the astral. It's for so much period of time in the astral. It could be, and you don't know for sure how long you're going to live, but you can make up some guesses based upon information that I've written. You can figure it out, how long you might live for. And then you can also include the mental dimension, the lower mental world, and continue with your relationship to God. If you make an agreement and you follow through on it, you will stay together in a body sense, meaning that death will almost certainly be within a very short time of each of you. And so you stay together, provided that your commitment has been followed through responsibly on your co-creation. It makes your life into one. I'll explain why in a few minutes. That's true. But for right now, all you need to know about that is that that's what happens, and so you don't have to worry, well, am I going to die first and then 25 years later? No, that's not going to happen. It's automatic. It's automatic. The more you set in, we'll say, your agreement together, and the more you follow through in your co-creation together of creating light in the world that you're living in, then the results are automatic. Your lives are joined. They're joined in light. And this is a great system, because as long as you stay with it, it's going to develop virtually the maximum level of responsibility and the maximum level of co-creation. Now, what about people who say, well, we've got enough co-creation that we're going to go right back to our souls? We're going to go through all of life in the astral world and all of life in the monastic or mental world. These are sub-worlds, of course, so there's actually more than one we might be talking about. And all that time, which could be quite a bit of time, we're going to stay together. Well, if you choose to do that, and you have a plan, and you follow the plan for as long as you live in each dimensionality, then you will reach a point where you will go back to your souls together. Now, what does that mean? That means it's very likely, because you will have co-created during the time you are, the process of going back to your soul, especially the higher parts of the monastic world, is where you're starting to develop your next lifetime, the next personality you're going to be, the whole thing. You're going to be involved in that, but you'll be doing it together. So guess what's going to happen in your next lifetime? You're going to be together again for as long as you choose to in that next lifetime. Is that making sense to you? Okay, now some of you are saying, okay, prove to me that it's really going to work, because I've heard stories about this, but I don't believe it's true. Okay, I'll give you the basic science of it, but I'm not going to go through the in-depth, okay? The basic science is this, that the more you co-serve and the more that you're romantically involved with the other person, your energies have to match, and the co-service causes your centers to start to join together. Not only are your own centers joining together through spiritual service, but so are the centers of your partner. Okay? Have you got that? Now, there's an advantage to this, because your energies are not the same. They are complementary, but they're not the same. So you're living a double life. You're living not only your life, but you're living through the other person's life as well. And this becomes not just in a abstract, imaginary sense, but in a sense. You are really sensing what the other person is experiencing, and so are they of you. And you're really becoming one. That's the reason you stay together. That's the reason the bodies die together and why they're reborn together. And the whole factor is because you're becoming truly one in a complete sense, not some kind of fantasy sense, with the other person. Okay, that's enough of it. Now, there's a lot more science about, sure, we could talk for hours about how each chakra is involved and how the spins and phases and intensities and everything changes. And I mean, yeah, we could get into all that stuff, but this isn't a classroom about that. This is about a relationship. I'm just giving you the general bits and pieces. You want more, get some books and read it, and you'll figure it out. Okay. So, That's another practical, interesting point. Now, here's another point to that. Does everybody or should everybody really be seeking to go and do this level? Remember what I said about responsibility. You don't want to exceed what you're going to claim to do beyond your level of consciousness. So don't commit yourself to something that you really can't fulfill. Try to match what you agreed to do in co-service with what your abilities have been in the past and the level of responsibility each of you have shown in the past. Don't try to outdo the other person. It's not a contest. It's the opposite. You want the other person to actually be better than you are. Remember, if you're trying to give more to the other person, you're also seeking the other person to be greater. You should have great gratitude for all the things that you see in the other person, and you should respect those at a level greater than whatever your own attributes are. That's a sign of a real loving relationship. Difficult to do. Now, I know you say, well, half the time he or she is blaming me for this, and I'm blaming them for that, and I don't see that they're more responsible, and I don't see they're greater than I am. Well, then you got a ways to go. Because if you really are into what I'm talking about, you'll be at that level where you will see, with great gratitude, the other person is this great, wonderful being, and you will see more of them as a soul than you will see of your own. That's a key to letting you know that you're on the right track. If you don't have that experience, you need to make some changes. Those changes include giving more. Those changes also include being more grateful and better understanding or conscious of who and what the other person really is, their soul. And you're not seeing enough of their soul, and you're seeing too much of the personal side. If you're involved with that personal side, it's not spiritual enough. You need to be more involved with the person as a soul. The more you see them as a soul, then the more you further their soul nature, and the more they'll become their soul in the future. So the very fact you see them that way has the effect of changing them into a greater soul here, while physically or astrally, or wherever you are living at the time, they become more of that soul just by you taking notice of it. How wonderful is that? Pretty wonderful, I'd say. Okay. I think this is cool stuff. I hope you all go back and listen to this, because I know I'm covering a huge amount. If you follow everything I'm saying, you can develop the most incredible relationship with someone special. Now, what about meeting people? This is a big deal, right? And I haven't got enough time to talk about this. It's important. What about meeting people? So a lot of people I talk to say, where am I ever going to meet the person that's going to be my spiritual lover and all this stuff? And I say, well, the answer is, how much are you creating on your own? How much virtue are you creating? And then you'll meet the right person. Here's an interesting thought. Let's say that you're working only at 50% of your capacity of creation, of virtue. And you're the other 50% of the time, you're down in the dumps because you haven't met anybody, you're lonely, and you're miserable. And you say, well, this whole thing isn't very good because here I am, a spiritual person. I'm 50% of the time, I'm really doing good and everything else. And I still don't meet anybody. And everybody I meet seems to be just more selfish and miserable and whatever. Why is that going on? Because you're more capable than being 50%. That's the answer. The more your capability is, and the less you exercise it as an individual, not as a couple at that point, because you're not a couple yet, the less chance there is you're going to meet someone, the someone, who you can be in a spiritually romantic relationship. Okay, you want me to say that one more time? Yeah, I'll say it one more time, sure. If you are not exercising a significant portion of your ability to create light in this world, to be virtuous, even though you're doing more than most of the people around you, I'm not going to say, this is a comparison, you might be way above the consciousness of those people around you. But if you're not using what you have to co-create with God and to become a more spiritual person, you're going to find loneliness and isolation is one of the karmic consequences of your behaviors. Why? Okay. You know, I like that word why a lot, don't I? The reason is kind of a little bit difficult to understand. I'll do the best I can to simplify it. It goes like this. The more energy you put out, but the in relationship to the energy that you withhold, the energy you put out goes to help other people as much as you put it out. But the energy in relationship to that which you put out that you withhold becomes a repelling force to being close to others who are giving. Yeah, it's amazing. So you're retaining all this energy because you have a greater consciousness. Even though you're giving a lot, because you can give more than most other people, the amount you retain becomes a repelling force to meeting and being close with others. This includes friends, it includes all kinds of relationships, and it especially includes spiritually romantic interests. Okay? Have you followed that so far? I know. You don't like these rules. You don't like them. I didn't make them up. I didn't create this stuff. I'm just telling you how the system works. You choose how you want to be involved in it. God gives us free choice. We can do whatever we want. I consider my job just to mention what I think God sees. God chose to create as kind of the principles of the background. But all of us are free to choose what we want to do within that background. We can choose anything. So it isn't like people who are forced to be a certain way, just the opposite. They're free to do whatever they want, but the universe does have principles because the universe has God's thought in it. That thought is found everywhere. It's what makes life alive. But at the same time, we could ignore it. We could choose to do the opposite, and a lot of people do. By the way, let's just do that for as an experiment. Let's say someone actually actively chooses to reduce their consciousness by being, you know, like very dark people, maybe evil, and they are continuously attempting to be destructive to God. What is the result of those kinds of people in terms of relationship? Well, this is going to be a little weird because I told you that the retained energy pushes people away. But in that particular case, when you do what I just said, you attract people who are worse than yourself, equal to or worse than yourself. Okay? So you're going to bring in all kinds of people in relationships, and especially in a spiritual, I mean not spiritual, in a romantic relationship, sexual relationship, you're going to attract people equal to or worse than yourself to yourself. Let that be something to think about, right? Okay, so that's a little bit different concept than when I talked about people who are being spiritual and hold on to energy and that forces people away from them. But now you're getting into the, you know, the real negative side of existence. Hopefully, those of you who are listening tonight are not going to be in that vein. I really hope there aren't anyone that is in that vein. But if you have been, you might think about that. Maybe it will be the catalyst to encourage you to improve your life, improve your consciousness, and to become a better person overall, more of a soul. Okay, so let's move on to the next subject. I know there's a lot of them. I want to talk about children and parenting and how that has an equation in terms of a romantic, a spiritually romantic relationship. Children are the expressions of souls. Okay. And if you want to have really wonderful children, you need to have a really wonderful relationship with the person that is your co-parent. This becomes very difficult if you have random sexual encounters that beget children that neither one of you are able to actively be in a relationship together with. It really harms yourself and the children. Why? And a lot of you are going to say, well, I was married, but now we're divorced and we're kind of friends, but we still raise our kids and blah, blah, blah. I know. That's nowhere near as good as being in a true romantic spiritual relationship. It doesn't have to be with the biological parent, but it does need to be with the parental person who is most active with the children as being the most beneficial to the children. Children are harmed in relationships where the parents are not close, and I'm not talking about the biological, but whoever the parents are, when the parents are not close, they're harmed. So in single-parent families, even though one of the parents is giving to the children all the time, even spiritually in wonderful ways, they can't match the gifts that can be given to the same child if there were two parents who were spiritually, romantically loving. Why? Because if we go right back to the beginning of the show, I'll do this as quick as I can, as I told you, the uniqueness of a sexual relationship that involves sexual energies is such that you can't substitute for that a parent that's living 100 miles away that you barely see and you just happen to trade kids every so often with, or even the next door person, but you're not romantically involved with, and maybe you're just sort of friends. You can't substitute the uniqueness of that relationship, and it harms a child because they get some of who they are, some of their identity, by observing and living the relationship of their parents. There's a great poem. It's called Children Learn What They Live. And you can't, if you go, it's an unknown author. If you go and read that poem, I think it's a wonderful poem because it tells so much of the truth behind what I'm saying. You can teach, and you should, if you can't do what I'm suggesting at the present time. Certainly be honest and open with the children and tell them how you feel. You should never hide feelings. You shouldn't let children think that you're having a good romantic relationship with somebody that you're not, because they'll know anyway. And then they'll become hypocrites and liars in many ways. So don't do that, because it doesn't help them. Remember, they're extensions of souls. You're here as a parent to help them to become more of a soul. And if you don't do what I'm suggesting, the results are you're not fulfilling in a responsible way a major part of one of your obligations. It is your responsibility to do that. And lying is not a solution. I know a lot of people may disagree with what I'm saying, but I'm not saying you have to be brutally honest, like go into some graphic detail or something. No. I'm saying it's conceptually honest, where the reason why is clear to the child in the most basic way possible, depending upon their age. Get below 7 years old, this becomes very tricky. Because the conceptual development of the child is too narrow sometimes to understand the full impact of what I'm explaining. Then you got to do it in little pieces, and as they grow, you have to help foster and develop it so it becomes more full as they grow older. They may be a little screwed up, that means. And when they're younger, they may have some aberrant behaviors that you really can't fully help because they can't completely fathom maybe the reason you're not sexually, spiritually developing a relationship with your partner. Or maybe you don't even know your partner anymore, whatever the situation might be. And so they can't fully grasp it, and it is a difficult situation. But do the best you can. Always do the best you can. Children are going to be us someday. Remember that. If we're adults now, we're just going through stages, and we're going to become children again. There is no being born into the monastic or to the astral world. So you have to be born in the physical and then go back. So we're all going to be born in the physical world again. Except, I mean, maybe a very, very small number might not, because if you leave the human kingdom, you don't have to go through that experience again. Let's assume that we're all going to be humans in our next life. And so when we're going to be humans, we're going to be somebody's child. And if we live, and I'm going to tell you this right now, if we live spiritually responsible at the present time, especially as we are involved in the most intimate people in our lives, and this is particularly true if you live in a spiritual group or with a group of people who are following a certain spiritual mission, then you want to be as responsible as possible, because what happens is that's what your experience is going to be when you're reborn here. It will be replicated for you. You screw things up, you're going to have parents that screw you up. Not as a punishment, it's just cause and effect. What you put out is what you get back. So don't do it because you're going to get it back. Not because you're going to get it back, but I'm just saying it's certainly not going to be pleasant in any case, and it's going to screw you, your next personality up. Okay, let me go. I got enough, I guess, to say one more thing here. In terms of the level of, we'll say, commitment that somebody should have, it should always match the amount of co-creation that they have chosen together to be involved in. A lot of times people ask me, well, what would you think is the appropriate level to be committed with this person? They'll tell me some things about them that are kind of superficial, whatever. And I say, well, what is the relationship in which you're going to create? That level of creation is your level of commitment. That's it. That is the bottom line in any relationship, be it spiritually romantic or friends or whatever. It's all based upon that. Once you know the level of commitment you've made in terms of co-creation, meaning how much light are you going to create in the world together, you then know the level of commitment you have made with each other. And then you should stand by that commitment until the co-creation that you have chosen to do is done. Now, some people are going to say, well, but what if you change your mind and this and that? Well, if both of you change your mind at the same time and at the same level, it does some harm in some circumstances because others may be involved and probably will be, but at least you have a chance to do the best you can within that realm. But if you pull the plug unilaterally, that's a very bad circumstance. About as bad as you can get if you're really committed and then you do something like that. Results can be disastrous, beyond your wildest imagination, really bad news. So don't do it, and remember that the commitments you make are who you're going to and what you're going to experience in the astral, mental world, and in your next life, and maybe beyond even that lifetime. So it has tremendous consequences, and so be very careful about who you choose to commit yourself with and then how you go about doing it. I hope that's made some sense. I'm out of time for right now, but I want you to know that I really enjoy talking about this subject because I think there's a lot of practical things that you can apply from some of the things that we talked about or that I yakked about, really, right? If you haven't heard about it, you should. Ideal Self-Sorption Resveratrol. That's the stuff I've been using for about, 15, 16 months now. It really works. This stuff is fantastic. It does all the things that you may have read about, including enhancing one's overall sense of well-being. It decreases the aging process in a couple of different ways. It's fantastic stuff. It works on animals as well. There's a resveratrol VF formula, ideal cell sorption, that also is available. It works equally or better as well on our pets. Call foreveryoungproducts.com, 800-777-7850. If you want some of this stuff, try it. Try it for a couple of months. I think after 2 to 3 months, you're going to be convinced. You do have to try it for a couple of months because your body's not going to change that fast. I mean, you don't want it to change that fast in reality. That would be a little bit much, I would say. If you want to get a hold of me, type to me. Type thoughts at whylifeis.com. I mentioned a couple times. You can email me. I am available, really. And try out our website. You can also listen to all the archives on that site as well as the station site, bbsradio.com, and angelswisdom.com. Angelswisdom.com. You can go to that website and find out more. One last thing, if you haven't tried it, try a bottle of Soul Balance with all of the different enhancing features and pills that come with it. And that stuff can save your life, depending upon what kind of problems you might be having. If you want to know more about it, you can call 602-472-5127 and talk to the people who answer. They know a lot about it. We're out of time for right now. I hope this show has made some sense to you. I hope it has been helpful. Until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.